बिहारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जन वाला गिरिवरदारी, जय गोपी जन वाला गिरिवरदारी, यशोरनंदन व्रज जन रंजन, यशोरनंदन व्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीरावन चारी, यमुना तीरावन चारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 3, entitled The Lord's Pastimes Out of Vrindavan, Text 18. Ayajaya Dharmasutam Asvamedas Tribiribuhu Sobichmanan Anujakshan Reme Krishnam Anuvrataha Ayajayat Dharmasutam Asvamedas Tribirvibhu Sopichmam Anuchai Rakshan Reme Krishnam Anuvrataha Yajayat Dharmasutam Ashvamedas Tribirvibhu Sopichmam Anujai Rakshan Reme Krishnam Anuvrataha.
Ayajaya
Krishnam Anuvrataha.
Ayajaya Dharmasutam.
Ashvamedha Stribir Vibhu. So Bhishmam Anujai Raksham. Eme Krishnam Anuvrataha.
Ayajaya
Dharmasutam. Ayajayat, made to perform, Dharmasutam, by the son of Dharma, Maharaj
Yudhisthira,
Ashvamedhai, by horse sacrifices, Tribihi, three, Vibhu, the Supreme Lord, Saha, Maharaj Yudhisthira, Api, also, Chmam, the earth, Anujai,
assisted by his younger brothers,
Rakshan, protecting, Deme, enjoyed, Krishnam, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anuvrataha, constant follower. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The Supreme Lord induced the son of Dharma to perform three horse sacrifices, and Maharaj Yudhisthira, constantly following Krishna, the Personality of Godhead, protected and enjoyed the earth, assisted by his younger brothers. Purport. Maharaj Yudhisthira was the ideal monarchical representative on the earth because he was a constant follower of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna. As stated in the Vedas, Ishupanishad, the Lord is the proprietor of the entire manifested cosmic creation, which presents a chance for the conditioned souls to revive their eternal relationship with the Lord and thus go back to Godhead, back home. The whole system of the material world is arranged with that program and plan. Anyone who violates the plan is punished by the law of nature, which is acting by the direction of the Supreme Lord. Maharaj Yudhisthira was installed on the throne of the earth as a representative of the Lord. The king is always expected to be the representative of the Lord. Perfect monarchy necessitates representation of the supreme will of the Lord, and Maharaj Yudhisthira was the ideal monarch on this supreme principle. Both the king and the subjects were happy in the discharge of worldly duties, and thus protection of the citizens and enjoyment of natural life with full cooperation of material nature followed in the reign of Maharaj Yudhisthira and his worthy descendants like Maharaj Parikshit. Om Magyanti Marandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatan Sahagana Raganatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakambitam Scha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dino Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhube Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Beg for the blessings of the assembled devotees. May our words be aligned with Guru Parampara for the pleasure of Shri Shri Radha Shyam Sundar. May all the devotees be benefited by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam together. Again, this is Canto 3, Chapter 3, entitled The Lord's Pastimes Out of Vrindavan. Text 18. The Supreme Lord induced the son of Dharma to perform three horse sacrifices, and Maharaj Yudhisthira, constantly following Krishna, the personality of Godhead, protected and enjoyed the earth, assisted by his younger brothers. Srimad Bhagavatam is not just knowledge, philosophy, stories, but it's transcendental energy. It's transcendental power. It's called the Lord's Samvit Shakti. Samvit Shakti means the revealing potency. There's a potency that reveals God, the Samvit Shakti. So when we hear Srimad Bhagavatam, it's not just an intellectual exercise for our minds, but there's a way you just absorb yourselves in the sound vibration, Prabhupada's purport, right? The words of a pure devotee. It's an actual energy. And if we're absorbed, if we're receptive to it, then the Samvit Shakti of the Lord enters into our heart and reveals the Lord to us through the sound of the Bhagavatam. The whole Bhagavatam is Samvit Shakti, which means anything that you read, even if it seems disconnected from Krishna, if you're receptive, it can reveal Krishna. So it's a different vibration, higher vibration, a spiritual vibration. And it's not just about philosophy and stories, because that's how we learn things. So we have that habit. Oh, let me just put this into my brain. But it's a consciousness, a state of consciousness, that can receive the Samvit Shakti of the Lord. And what is that state of consciousness? It's a non-speculative state. Because the mind wants to seize and grasp knowledge. But that won't work. It wants to seize it, it wants to grab it. But the way it works, actually, the knowledge is above us. So it actually seizes us once we're receptive to it. So you don't seize the truth. The truth seizes you when you're in a faithful, receptive state. That is the Guru Parampara, that because everyone has this humility and understanding that not by my understanding or knowledge, but by humility, by devotional spirit, then this knowledge coming down will come down into me. And then one can have the realization that actually helps us. So we're hearing in the Bhagavatam about Vidura. He went on pilgrimage. And it's described he went alone on pilgrimage. Ananya. But I was looking at Prabhupada's, the transliteration of the word ananya. It means alone or with no other. And Prabhupada translated it as seeing Krishna everywhere alone. So there's one word. Prabhupada gives four words. Ananya means alone. But he gave a fuller description of the reality. Seeing Krishna everywhere alone. That was Vidura when he went on pilgrimage. Because the pure devotee has that liberty to, you know, we might say that's not an accurate translation. It's just one word. Prabhupada's giving so many other things. It's not accurate. But the pure devotee has this liberty because they actually see more sometimes. Prabhupada's giving us more so we can have a fuller understanding. Because Vidura, when the mind is absorbed in Krishna, when you're devoted to Krishna, you're never alone. You're never alone. So even though the word is alone, Prabhupada clarifies, because he's a devotee of Krishna. And Prabhupada knows also from his own consciousness, right? When Prabhupada came to New York City, he would say, actually, it appears that he was alone, you know, on the boat alone, coming to New York, just wandering around. I have on my phone, because I lived in New York City for a long time, and I looked at the Prabhupada Lilamrita and all the places Prabhupada visited in order. So I kind of did a little tour for myself where I went to each place, the first place he was, the second place, the third place, according to what's described there. And I took pictures of all those places in my phone. So I have like a... And all through that time, he's just walking the streets of New York alone. He would get on buses sometimes. And sometimes Prabhupada said he would get on a bus and not have any plan to go here. He just wanted to see New York so he can... But he was meditating on how to give Krishna. I want to see what's there. I want to see what's happening. Getting realizations from everything. Just walking around, taking a bus. Can you imagine Prabhupada Acharya on a New York City bus alone? You know, just meditating on how to serve Krishna in this very foreign place for him. But Prabhupada said, he commented many times, actually, I was never alone. Always there, my spiritual master was with me, and also Krishna always with me. Never felt alone, Prabhupada said. Just imagine if you'll never feel alone. We all feel loneliness existentially when we're separated from Krishna. It's not about surrounding yourself with all kinds of people and even family. It doesn't take away that deep loneliness in the heart. There's an existential loneliness. I was with this young man who was passing away in the hospital. He was only 42 years old. And I remember I went to visit him. And the one thing about him is that there was always people in the room with him. He had a big family. Brothers and sisters and cousins and his mother. Very sad, of course, but everybody was there just trying to be with him, encourage him, talk to him. And I sat with him one day and I asked him what he was going through, how he was feeling. And he said, I'm feeling completely alone. And I thought that was strange at first because he's always surrounded by people. But especially before dying, a lot of superficial things fall away, and then we're confronted with what's really going on in the heart. And he was in touch with a deeper loneliness. It doesn't really matter if we're around people, there's still a very deep loneliness if we're not feeling Krishna's presence. So the key to overcoming loneliness is to become purified so that we can realize that Krishna is always there in the heart. Krishna is always with us. So Vidura, he was going to all these places of pilgrimage. And although he was alone, he was always meditating on Krishna. And by, you know, this is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Tasyaham na pranashami. Krishna says, the one who's devoted to me, I'm never absent to that person. And they're never absent to me. I'm never lost to that person. They're never lost to me. So when Vidura was traveling by the Lord's arrangement, he came to the Jamuna River. And he came in contact with Uddhava. Uddhava was a very advanced devotee of Krishna. And even though Uddhava was much younger than Vidura, he considered Vidura like a father. And Vidura would be asking him questions, so it almost seems Uddhava's in the role of guru. But Uddhava, because he was younger and Vidura was older, he fell at his feet, offered obeisances, bowed down with his respectful etiquette. And then Vidura began to ask questions. And he asked about so many different things, so many personalities, the different Pandavas. And finally he mentions the name Krishna. Vidura is asking lots of questions and then he asks about Krishna. And it's described, Uddhava, as soon as he heard the word, the name Krishna, then his consciousness left into the spiritual world. And then when it was time for him to speak, it's described in the verse, Nirlokam Puna Agataha. He heard about Krishna. His consciousness was transported to Krishna in the spiritual world. But he had to speak. So at that point, Nirlokam Puna Agata. Then he came back down to the planet of the human beings. That's what it says in the verse. So that he could speak, because he was transported. This is the power of remembering Krishna. His remembrance was so profound that when he heard the name Krishna, he was with Krishna in a different place. But he had to answer questions, so he came back down to the planet of the human beings. Amazing. And he began to speak about Krishna Lila to Vidura. Vidura didn't even ask about all those things, but Uddhava couldn't help. He just started giving these pastimes, little snapshots of the pastimes. Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill. Krishna's with the cows in the pasture field. He's giving these little snapshots, which are like portals for an advanced devotee. You know a portal. You enter a portal and you're in a different place. So when they're hearing that vibration of Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill, an advanced devotee actually enters in to that lila. It's like a portal. For us, for me, it's just words, you know, try to appreciate. But when the consciousness is purified, there's so much more when you hear. So he spoke Krishna Lila, and then he spoke Krishna's Lila in Mathura, and Krishna's Lila in Dvarka, and he was going through these different pastimes. And then finally, what is this verse? How is this verse connected to all of that? Because the lila of the Lord, there's the Lord comes into this world for mostly two reasons. He displays his lila, his pastimes, his beautiful pastimes, like we're hearing Lord Damodar. Why does he do these activities? It attracts the heart to hear them. So we become attracted. But suppose we don't become attracted. Suppose the heart is not ready, is not becoming attracted in that way. Then what else does Krishna do when he comes? He tries to establish a situation on this earth that can give people the opportunity to eventually become his devotee. So that system, that establishment is the Varnashram Dharma. So therefore part of Krishna's duty when he comes is he's establishing a representative of his as the king. This is what Prabhupada's talking about here. This is why this verse suddenly appears in the middle of the lila, because it's also, this is also the Lord's mission. Establish a situation in the material world which offers all the conditioned souls an opportunity to revive their Krishna consciousness. And he can do that by establishing the king. It says here, Yudhisthira Maharaj is describing him as Krishnam Anuvrataha, which means he's the constant follower of Krishna. That's who's supposed to be king. That's who's supposed to be prime minister, president, a constant follower of God. You see, Prabhupada says in the purport, the Lord is the proprietor of the entire manifested cosmic creation, which presents a chance for the conditioned souls to revive their eternal relationship with the Lord. The whole system of the material world is arranged with that program and plan. You know, all the major religions, they all started off as little cults. To be a follower in the beginning days took great risk and faith and boldness and trust. You know, you look at Christianity with Jesus, just a few followers. To be a Christian then required such courage, such faith. Now, You know, everyone know whatever your parents are, you call yourself that. It's become so cheap. Buddhism as well, right? The Buddha is walking. He has his disciples. They're following, they're giving everything up and following his instructions. Now, you're just born in this place. Your parents call themselves Buddhists, so you call yourself a Buddhist. Yeah, this is for us too. The parents are Hare Krishnas. I call myself a Hare Krishna. That may be. But there's, you can see when these religions began, there was so much, it was so much deeper. At the same time, the mission always is to spread. It's not just a few disciples, that we want the whole world to be benefited. So how did all these religions spread? Most of them, Buddhism, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, by somebody in power who took hold of that faith. Some ruler, some king became converted. And then, you know, it's not always good, but then that king also enforces it on the people of the land. But the king does have a duty to make sure that people are, they have an opportunity for God consciousness. And Prabhupada explains a good king, and even today, because there are different religions, and a good king will appreciate all those religions and just encourage. He won't make any distinction, this is better than that, and he will just encourage everyone to become God conscious in their own way, and to make sure that that's going on in the kingdom. So these all the different religions actually became spread throughout the world just by this process. This is why Krishna uses this process. He established Yudhisthira, pure devotee, as the king, because that will have a great benefit on the masses. So formerly there used to be this relationship, like in the Vedic system. You know, the Vedic system didn't start with a little cult. It was actually, it came complete in a sense, because the whole, even the governmental, the whole idea of, you know, Varnashram Dharma is God consciousness. It gives the duties of the kings, the brahmanas, the kshatriyas, the vaishyas, the shudras. It came there as a complete whole. And it was just up to people to live it, manifest it, follow it. But, you know, we look at the other religions and there was one great soul who appeared. Muhammad, Jesus, Buddha, Abraham. And then because of their shakti, because of their power, others started to follow. And it was kind of a small thing, a group, a cult. Right? We're all afraid of cults. Every religion started as a cult. Some little group of people that were giving things up and following. And even the devotees here, some of the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada didn't mind saying the word cult, even though it has a bad connotation for us. But he would say the cult of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But even some of you, it was risky to follow Prabhupada. Here's somebody, you know, an old man comes from India, he comes to the West, and he has so many new things that he's saying that had never before been heard. Krishna is God. God is a little cowherd boy. So people who followed and surrendered in that way, and they recognized something in Prabhupada, but it was still very bold and courageous and risky, and they were surrendered. And therefore they're greatly benefited. They received the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. Right, so this is how it starts, and then it spreads by some king or some ruler. And there's supposed to be a relationship between that ruler and those initiates, those disciples, those brahmanas. There's supposed to be a relationship so that the brahmanas, those original followers of the different religions, they're supposed to actually advise the rulers, and those rulers then can nicely rule. If everything is done very carefully, cleanly, like the Varnashram system, if it's followed very nicely, it's very scientific. When you follow your duty in life, you discover your duty, you're guided in your duty by a spiritual master, and then you follow it and you live according to that, what happens? You become stable. You become healthy as a person. And because many people are doing it, the whole society becomes stable. They all have different functions. Just like our body. Prabhupada always gives the example of the body. There's the arms, the legs, the heart, the brain. Everything is different. But if everything performs their function nicely, then the whole body is benefited. So the whole social body is benefited when everybody's doing their duty. So why? That's not an end in and of itself. That now everything is stable and we're all happy. No, everything is stable. Everybody is stable internally and socially stable. So now they can surrender to God from that place of stability. Now they can give everything. Now they can dedicate themselves. All the activities that were previously karma can now become yajna. This is how Bhagavad Gita describes in the third chapter. It talks about karma. We have the tendency towards karma. Action, activities. Those activities have to become yajna, a sacrifice for the Lord. And then we can reach that perfectional stage. So even in the Varnashram system, society, you see society, all the different cultures and societies of the world, they're just striving for that stability as an end in of itself. And now we're comfortable, everybody's good, everybody's happy. But no, the Varnashram system understood, you get there, hopefully you can get there, so then you can take the next and final step. Now from a stable, secure place within society, within my own mind, my own heart is peaceful, I give myself to God. That was the idea. But when you leave out that last step of giving yourself to God, then that system has to become corrupt. Because it's under the modes of nature. Because that stability, that happiness, that comfort is the mode of goodness. And the modes of nature are always in flux. So if you leave out that one part of surrender to God, every culture, every society, every political system must eventually become corrupt. It can't, because you can't sustain the mode of goodness. It doesn't sustain. By nature, it's in flux. The modes are always in flux. So that's what happened. That's what happens again and again when the surrender to God is left out of any political system. Doesn't matter this one or that one. They'll all be failures ultimately. They can, you know, do a little something in the mode of goodness for some time if they're successful. Even that is very rare, of course, nowadays. But to speak of healthy, stable, there's wars, there's so much fighting. This is sinking down into passion and ignorance, destruction. Because this one point is left out. So what happens when we associate with the mode of passion and ignorance, then we become very entangled in karma, karmic reactions. And then life becomes, there's no question of healthy, comfortable, life just becomes battling against the karmic reactions that we ourselves have set in motion through our actions, our thoughts, our feelings. We set it all in motion, and it comes to us. And life just becomes struggling with that, trying to overcome that. But we're trying to overcome that on the same platform that created those problems. We're still karmic. We're still, the false ego is still in the center. We're still egocentric. So even finding solutions to those problems that confront us, they create more problems. Until one can overcome the false ego, be situated in spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness. So just imagine when this whole world that we're living in, with all these different societies and governments, everybody totally entangled in karmic activity. Imagine the collective karmic cloud bank that hovers over the planet Earth. You know, karma's like that. It's like it all gets accumulated into a cloud. There's a personal cloud. Like we call it aparabdha karma. Karma that's coming. It hasn't come yet, but it's there unmanifest. Just like the water in the cloud is not manifest yet. It's just a cloud. But eventually it will break and there will be water. So imagine this whole earth. You can imagine this dark cloud that's above it from all karmic reactions that are coming very soon. And sometimes they just suddenly burst onto the scene and there's some war, there's some catastrophe. So what's the solution to all this? Prabhupada is giving the solution. Prabhupada always gives the solution to this very dire situation that we hear about sometimes. Well, some people may say, well, we have to establish Varnashram Dharma. Yeah, we can try for that. But is there any other way, you know, that we can understand? Just like we're hearing about the king right now, and he has his subjects, and there's the different parts of the kingdom, So, in the fourth canto, Narada Muni, he also gives a story, the story of King Puranjana. And Prabhupada says in the first purport that introduces that story that every living being is King Puranjana. So now we're going to hear about a king and a kingdom and gates and walls and everything a kingdom has, but it's really all about us and ourselves. And it's very instructive. It reveals so many things. I wanted to share a little bit about that, if that's okay. Because, you know, we'll hear about Yudhisthira and Parikshit and we'll think, oh, so nice, it used to be so nice, this kingdom. And then that's it. And what do we do? That's not our situation here, right? We don't have a conducive, a favorable government or society where God consciousness is actually encouraged. We don't have that. We have the exact opposite. So then we have to still use these principles of Varnashrama, of a king. You know, just like Narada Muni says, who is the king within you? It's the Atma. The Atma is meant to be king. The Atma. That king also has his master, which is the Lord. But in the story, this king Puranjana, the original king, is actually the Atma. And what's the kingdom? It's this physical body. This is our kingdom. And there are nine gates into this kingdom. What are the nine gates? Anyone remember? What part of the body? The senses, yes, the two eyes, two ears, the mouth. Because if you think about it, they're like gates, because a gate lets something in. Open the gate and things come in. So things are coming in through the eyes, the gates, the gate of the eyes, the gate of the ears, the gate of the nose, the gate of the mouth. And therefore, a devotee has to be careful what he lets in through that gate, because that enters the kingdom. You know? So there has to be some protection on the outside, and when you have to be conscious of what you let into these nine gates. So it's described, King Puranjan, he's the soul. Now think of, this is about me and you. This is not just a story for us to say, oh, interesting, but everything is about me and you. This king, the Atma, enters the capital. Narada Muni says, what is the capital? It's the material heart, it's the material mind. So the king, the Atma, now is entering into the material mind, the material heart, he identifies there. And what's in that capital? There's a description. There are palaces and beautiful lakes, gardens, so many beautiful things are there in that capital, the material mind. What does that mean? It means so many promising comforts and desires that are there in the heart. So the material mind is full of so many sweet, promising desires for happiness, for pleasure. So therefore it's described, the capital has all these beautiful parts to it, beautiful parks. And then, so now the king, the Atma now is identified with the mind, if you're following the flow of this, and is full of material desires. And this King Puranjan, now he comes upon a woman, very beautiful woman, and he begins talking to her. This is the future queen. What does the queen represent in this story? The queen represents the intelligence. So the material mind now is in union with the material intelligence. This is their union. They become married. They become married. And then the intelligence takes control. So you see the woman takes control in this story. That whatever she does, he does. Whatever she eats, he eats. Wherever she decides to walk, King Puranjan goes with her. You know, it's like he's doing everything that his wife does. Because this is showing how the material mind follows the material intelligence. So there's this relationship, there's this union between the material mind and the material intelligence. Now we're, you know, the king again, originally this is the Atma, now absorbed in the material mind and material intelligence. And so the king leaves his wife at some point. What does that mean? The mind gives up the intelligence even, and he goes off and goes hunting and killing In other words, committing so many sinful activities. And what happens? If we go very, very deep into sinful activities without using our intelligence, we actually start to become disgusted. So the king goes away, he's off giving up this intelligence and performing so many sinful activities. He becomes exhausted and he regrets, what have I done? Why did I do that? And he goes back to his home. Prabhupada says, this means going back to his home means going back to his conscience. You know, if we absorb ourselves in sinful activities, eventually we'll become so disgusted that our conscience may wake up. We can return to our conscience and think, what am I doing? Let me get my life back together. So the king goes back to his wife. But this is the problem. This is the mistake. She's just material intelligence. So he goes back to take shelter again to his material intelligence. And then they produce many, many children. What are those children? Actions and reactions. So when the material mind and the material intelligence are associating, and different activities are coming from that, then one is getting entangled in action and reaction. That's the children. Then what happens? Well, then the city is attacked. Okay, so the city, the kingdom is us, right? There comes an attack from the outside. His name is Chandavega. He comes to attack this kingdom. Who's Chandavega? I don't know if you remember. I forgot all this too, but preparing for this, I looked at the pastime again. But anyone remember who Chandavega is? Yes. Close. Right before old age. What causes old age? Time. Chandavega is time. So time comes to attack this body, the subtle body, the material body. But you're right, he had a daughter, and she represents old age. So old age came. Time passed, old age came. There's King Paranjan, he's just absorbed. And then death is coming. And before his death, what happens? What comes out of his heart? What comes? All his attachments. He's thinking about his children. He's thinking about his wife. He's absorbed in his wife. You know? Again, you have to see the inner meaning to all this too. You know, he's absorbed in his own intelligence, his own thoughts, his own feelings. That's a self-absorption. It means that I'm in the center, not Krishna. I'm absorbed in my own, my children, my wife, my whatever it may be, I and mine. So death comes upon him, time passes, and then it's described that everyone in the kingdom turns against him. Isn't this how what happens at death? If the kingdom is our body, we have all these cells, we have all these organs, they turn against us in the end, right? What is cancer? Cancer is the cells in your body turning against you, attacking you, trying to kill you. There's a fight, there's a struggle. So therefore, there's a fight with many soldiers in the kingdom in this pastime. Narada Muni is telling this pastime to Pichini Bahi, right? He's telling this pastime to him as an allegory, but it's really about him and it's really about us. So the time of death has come and he's absorbed in his children and his wife, and so what happens? He dies. And because of all his sinful activities, he has to experience hellish experiences. Right, so that there's a description of that as well. And then he comes back. You know, when we die, according to our karma, we may have, if we had good karma, very good karma, pious karma, we may have a heavenly-like experience. But it's just temporary. And if we live very sinful, then we'll have hellish experiences. And that's also temporary. And then you come back. And then you come back in another birth in the material world. It's all the material world. Heaven, hell, earth, all the planets, all the material world, just two different sides of the material world. Now, while living, and after death, that's also the material world, heaven or hell, and then you come back. So he takes birth again. Because he was thinking of his wife, he takes birth as a woman. So there's a chapter entitled Puranjan Takes Birth as a Woman. So he's now a woman. He's humbled. It's considered a lower birth, right? So he used to be king, and now he's just ordinary woman. But that lower birth means he's a little more humble. And what does he do? It's described that that woman gets married to one man. That man represents the spiritual master. So now in this next birth, he's humbled. He's gone through a whole lot in his life. Now he's a body of a woman. He marries this man, but the allegory, what's meant by this is he accepts a spiritual master. They have children. Who are those children? Anyone, are you able to follow all this, or am I losing everybody? There's so many parts. Yeah, okay. Yes, who are the children of the spiritual master and the disciple? The children is described as the items of devotional service. You know, this is how it's described. One child is one daughter who has black eyes, and it's described because her, this is the meaning, the inner meaning is that because this person's eyes are fixed on the Lord is Sham, he's blackish. So that one of the daughters has completely fixed attention on Krishna. So when the spiritual master and the disciple unite, when it actually takes place, that contact, then one becomes fixed on Krishna. That's the inner meaning. And then there's other children, and they represent Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Padasevanam, all the items of devotion. So now it comes to the death of that man, the husband, the spiritual master. And we're coming towards the end here of the allegory. So the spiritual master, so that husband dying, her husband dying is like the spiritual master dying. You should read those purports. Prabhupada explains when the spiritual master departs from this world. And because of the attachment, Paranjan in the form of a woman, she's just lamenting, she's crying. She's so attached. She loved him so much. And then she's arranging a fire for the burning of the body. And then she herself is going to also be willing to enter that fire and die. And that means, that's very deep. That means the disciple is willing to die for that same service of the guru. This is how Prabhupada explains it. In other words, the body of the spiritual master will be burned. The disciple wants the same thing for himself, follows the same path. So that means when the disciple is also willing to enter the fire of the mission of the spiritual master after his departure. So very beautiful description there. But before he enters the fire, this is the most important part. Well, there are so many important parts, but before he enters the fire, somebody comes to him. Is described Sakayam, Brahmana Sakayam, a friend comes, an old friend, Pura. Puraha means this old friend comes to him. Who's that old friend? It's Krishna in the heart, the super soul. It's described the super soul. So the spiritual master is gone. The disciple's willing to die for the mission of the spiritual master. And at that time, the super soul comes to now give instructions. So that means when we have that sincerity to also follow the mission of the guru, that sacrificing heart, and say the spiritual master departs, but super soul will now come and instruct us from within. Actually, what is guru? Guru is super soul externally. So first external, representation of super soul, then internal. So we also want to connect internally to super soul and be guided that throughout our lives. So super soul comes and gives so many instructions saying, you know, you were a woman, you were a man, you had this kingdom, all of this was actually illusory. The truth is, and he gives this nice example too, if we're like two swans. The super soul, the Atma, and the Paramatma. Just like in the Upanishads, it says two birds. So he also says two swans. And this swan now is inviting, the Paramatma is inviting the Atma to come back to the spiritual kingdom. Come back to the spiritual kingdom with me. So we're talking about the material kingdom, but this is the real kingdom that we belong to is the spiritual kingdom. And if we follow this story, everything is there for us to know what to do, how to do it. First you have to struggle in life so much, suffer. Hopefully we become a little humbled by that suffering. We see the need for a spiritual master. We become attached to that spiritual master. We're willing to die for the mission of the spiritual master. That's what's meant by entering the fire there. And with that mood, with that spirit, then super soul will guide us from within, and we will return back to the spiritual kingdom. So this is the, I wanted to bring this up because, you know, when we hear about the different kings of the past and the Varnashram system, and it all seems very nice, but the allegories are sometimes helpful. Narada Muni tells this allegory in the fourth canto, because it suddenly turns in on us, instead of us just hearing about former personalities and thinking, wow, that was a nice king, and he was attached to Krishna, how nice. Well, this is all about us. We have to be like that. We have to apply those same principles, but to ourselves, the kingdom of the body. The queen is the intelligence. The king, the Atma, has entered the material mind and is becoming lost and engaged in sinful activities. But through all that, if one can see the need for the spiritual master, the need for guru, sadhu, shastra, and take shelter there and follow, like it says here, Krishnam anuvrataha, that Yudhisthira was a constant follower of the Lord, then everything in the kingdom will be auspicious. That means everything in our subtle body, material body, everything becomes auspicious when we surrender to the Lord and become His follower. So we'll stop here. Any thoughts, comments, questions, corrections? Yes. This is several, if you want to look at yourself, this is the fourth canto. Several chapters, 27 to 29, I think, about the whole story of Paranjan that I just gave a summary of the what it all means. Yes.
Thank you. Very many nice points. I was wondering, I think you made the point of, it was nice when you said, everything was sort of nice in prior yugas and everything was dharmic and religious, and then as the degradation sets in and come to like Kali Yuga, everything's not favorable for religion. But then I think you made the point, but still like those religious principles apply. Like, yes, we still have to try to follow them, even though it's unfavorable. And like you said, the Christians were so like, and Christ and the early Christians, it was so horrible for them. And then eventually, like it does, like in Constantine, he like became Christian, and then Christianity became more like accepted. Yeah. So I was just like, what is that degradation that makes it so, you know, inimical to like righteousness?
Yeah, it's like the, you know, our state of consciousness, when we don't make that connection, that actual connection to God, then it's like gravity. It just naturally falls down. So the modes of nature, the material modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, they're always alternating. So if we're there, we're absorbed in the modes of nature, it's just a matter of time before goodness falls into passion, passion falls into ignorance. Then you may come back up to goodness, and the idea is this is a cycle. And that cycle, when you rotate enough times in that cycle, the whole thing becomes miserable, even the mode of goodness, because there's no exit. It will fall again to passion. So if one has a vision, a complete vision of all this, see, we're in the moment, so it's hard to see this reality, but if you could step back and see that we're just rotating in the modes of nature again and again, then one doesn't want it anymore. One wants to find the real solution. What is the true solution? This is all the material energy. There's also a spiritual energy. Let me surrender there, take shelter of that energy. So even a society may call themselves religious and have followers, but there's no guarantee they're actually connected to God. Right? So we know parts of the world right now where everyone claims to be religious, and meanwhile there's criminal activity, there's such harshness, there's violence, there's pain.
Because like the whole Vedic society was keeping that mode of goodness like throughout the whole world. But then when those principles are lost due to time and degradation, then it, like you say, the lower modes like take over.
Yeah.
And then like what is this like in being so inimical when somebody wants to, like you said, those little cults sprung up, and then there's like so much, you know, negativity towards that. Like,
because
what is that?
What it is that we're identified with the false ego. We're just like the story of Paranjan. We're identified with this material mind, this material body, and the false ego. So when something pure comes, it's a threat to the existence of that person. And they fear it. They may even attack that pure thing. You know, Jesus was put on a cross, right? So he's coming with a very pure, good message for the benefit of all. But it's actually a threat to the material consciousness because it means the death of the material consciousness.
Because the Romans, they had their own like religious systems, but it was all based on like sense gratification.
Right. Yeah, it's a threat to sense gratification. It's a threat to all that. All those things we're attached to, when the pure devotee comes, we're confronted. We have to make a decision. Follow this, or that means giving up my life. But maybe I'm not ready to give up my life. Remember when the prince approached Jesus and said, "What do I do to attain the kingdom of God?" And he said, "You're very wealthy, sell it all and come with me." And the prince had like a tear in his eye because he knew he couldn't do it. And he turned away. But there was some regret in his heart, so there was some hope for him. But he turned away because he wasn't ready. So what to speak of, he was a little bit ready. He was a little regretful. Most of us today are not regretful with the message of the pure devotee of not being able to follow it. We're just against it because we just see it as a total threat. Yeah. That's why Prabhupada said, if they knew why I came to America when he first came by boat, he said, if they knew why I've come, they would have killed me. Because my mission, he said, was to stop intoxication, meat eating, gambling, illicit sex, pure activity. If they knew that was why this little Indian man showed up, if they knew that, they would have killed me right then and there. But they didn't know what I was doing. So I was safe. Under the radar.
Thank you. There you are.
Thank you, Prabhu.
I
was thinking about the point you made regarding receptivity and hearing the Bhagavatam. And can one gauge, or would you say, the degree of one's receptivity, does that correlate with one's ability to retain what they're hearing? Or is that another thing?
Certainly there's a connection. When the receptivity is very deep and we're very attentive, things that go in, you know. You know, the queen in the story represented the intelligence, right? So the intelligence is actually receptive. It's meant to be receptive, not active. You know, we think, use my intelligence, and we start, you know, very active, and figure it out, but the real thing is that, see, the feminine energy, she's a queen. Feminine represents receptivity. So the intelligence is actually feminine. It's meant to not actually be asserting itself and doing all and thinking all things and desires. It's meant to be just receptive to what's above it. You know, so in other words, the transcendental literature, the holy name, the intelligence is not to be figuring it all out, but it's meant to be a state of receptivity. Because it's right, you know, the Bhagavad Gita gives. There's the soul, the intelligence, the mind, and the senses in that order. So the intelligence is very close to the soul, but the relationship is one of receptivity, not one of active assimilation. And so, why did I bring that up? Something about what you said. Oh, the receptivity means... Yeah, this receptivity is not to be intelligent, so-called intelligent, intellectual, You know, you think like, oh, a very intellectual person can memorize things, but it's more of a state of openness to what is above it, you know.
Well, as you're saying this, I'm thinking, you know how Prabhupada says that doubting is a function of the intelligence. Mm. It seems that's a little contradictory to what you just said of receptiveness.
Yes.
Where the intelligence will question or
yes.
challenge.
But it's also not meant to question forever. It can question philosophically, but not,
okay.
You know, the intelligence has a few functions. In the third canto, it describes the functions of intelligence. Memory is one of them. States of consciousness, changing states of consciousness is also a function of intelligence. Discrimination. Mm. Okay. Yeah, so it has a few functions in that way. We are meant to question things and search and seek, hopefully to find answers. And then when we find those answers, we find the right spot for us in life, which is the connection, spiritual connection. Then what the questions continue, but now they're no longer challenging and trying to doubt the whole process or something like that. It's more just trying to figure out a few things so we can continue on our path.
Okay. You know, also, what effect did Narada Muni's analogy have on King Prachinibhartha?
Anyone know?
What effect
when Narada Muni told this whole allegory story to Prachinibhartha, what happened to King?
He gave up that.
Yeah, he gave up. Because also that was part of Narada Muni's message. This is all karma kanda and these sacrifices, and this is all sinful what you're doing.
Yes.
So then you take to the path of bhakti. So he accepted those. He was receptive.
He showed all the animals that he killed.
Yeah, yes.
They're waiting.
They're waiting to get revenge. That's what hell is, right? Hell is those things that is everything that we harmed and performed violence comes back to get us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
So Prabhu, thank you very much for that class. So the modes are in flux, so constant flux. And so what would you say, what are we going through now at the moment? Because at the moment the planet is in an upheaval, so much stuff going on. It's not just war, but just weather and so many weird phenomena happening at the moment. And so we know that sometimes it's favorable because the mode of goodness will be prominent, and then mode of ignorance will be more than mode of passion and ignorance. And at certain times, then those other modes will be more prominent. But it looks like degradation is really at its peak now. You think, how much more can we take? This planet can take.
Mm.
There could be a turn, a change, and then mode of goodness could. Even within this Kali Yuga, we have many cycles, don't we? And then, it could be good again for a while. And it seems like we may be on the verge of something fresh, like a breakthrough. Meaning, at the moment, the planet everything seems to be so unsettling. But maybe there's a purpose for that. That is giving. It wants to give birth. The planet to something new.
Mm.
And I've heard so many things said about this, that we're on the verge of something, a breakthrough.
Well, breakthrough is only possible for those who have the right consciousness, otherwise it'll be a breakdown, nothing is unfavorable once the consciousness is actually in the right place,
That's true.
So if the world becomes worse, then spiritual advancement could actually accelerate, because you have to take such deep shelter. You have to really search your own heart and be really focused. What is the true change?
Yes,
what is the truth?
And that could be a reason behind so many of the activities going on at the moment.
Yeah, for us, because for a devotee who has that vision, we understand that everything is coming for our benefit. Right. So even when things get worse, it's actually an opportunity where you could actually accelerate faster towards Krishna. So. The goodness, the passion, the ignorance, again, these are all moving. It's not, coming to the mode of goodness is not necessarily any kind of breakthrough. It maybe make us more lazy.
Yes. What the breakthrough means, it could be a rekindling of spirituality. Because the earth is waiting for that. I'm talking about the earth in general, because she's a being. You know, she is a being. And so at a certain time, there will be a reset.
Well, the reset is when it all gets destroyed and then another...
No, not a total destruction, the final destruction. No, but it can be...
Well, it's like this. It's the earth, just like the human body, is dying, right, in a sense. It's going towards deterioration, but in that downward deterioration, there may be little circles, little ups and downs.
Yes.
So maybe the earth, there could be some opportunity that's coming at its rise, but the whole thing is going down until there's a destruction and then a recreation. So it's just like us, you know. We're getting older. We're dying. We're getting closer to death. We may have ups and downs in old age. Hopefully, something comes into our life which can help us and bring us up a little bit, but.
But you said it right, Prabhu. I think the opportunity is here now for people, because I feel that people are being pushed. It's not like sitting on the fence anymore. You need to be one way or other. You can't be just sitting. So we have to move in one direction or other.
Yeah.
And so, so it could be, bad things might be happening, but it could be actually good for the planet, in a sense.
We'll see. You know, everything is... There's always some hope. At the same time, sometimes that hope gets disappointed again and again. And we have to strive for goodness in our own way to the capacity that we have, because goodness is a good platform for spiritual advancement.
Hare Krishna.
Yes, yes, Prabhu.
So, I mean, what he's saying is, basically, if you look at the Bhagavatam, tatas chanam dhanam satyam sotram, everything day by day is getting worse. So, like, you have some idea that get better, but yeah, like he's saying, there might be a little swirl of good happening, but according to 12th canon, every day, tatas cha anudina means day, anudina means day by day, everything's going down. Satyam, truth, satyam, dharma, first name is religion, tatas dharma, satyam, shocham, satyam means truth, shocham, cleanliness. Satyam, Kshama, forgiveness, Daya, mercy, Kalena Balina, that means according to time, strength, memory, everything is being reduced. Ayur means the length of life, strength, and Smriti, memory. So, the overall, we take it from the Shastra. This Bhagavatam says that, so, you know, if you think, it's going to get better, this is kind of a materialistic idea, you know. Of course, we want to stop the climate change and all that, and, you know, we're not running up there, but Prabhupada gave peace formula 529.
Yes.
In fact, we were instructed to print those up, the purport and the verse of 529, Suridam Sarvabhutana, and give those out at the peace marches, especially.
Okay.
But generally, we chant for peace, Shanti, Shanti.
Yeah. Thank you, Prabhu. From Govind Prabhu.
Sorry, late, but I just said something. It's very nice class. Thank you. I appreciate that. I remember Indraduna Maharaj, he, many years back when he gave class, he said Srila Prabhupada was speaking in Hindi to the audience in Hyderabad. And Indraduna Maharaj happened to be his secretary, servant, something like that. So during the class, he's dozing off. So Prabhupada noticed that and he didn't appreciate. He said, "Why are you falling asleep?" So then he tried to pinch himself and not to fall asleep, but still he fell asleep. So then Prabhupada says, "Again you're falling asleep." So then he said, "Well, you're speaking in Hindi. I don't understand anything what you are speaking." And then Prabhupada says, "This understanding, what I'm speaking to this audience," and they were there, the Indians. "This is transcendental knowledge. In the beginning of your class, you were expressing the importance of Sambit." And Sambit, there is a verse in Adilila, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishna Bhagavata Gen Sambhite Sar Brahma Gyanadik Sap Puriba. To understand Krishna is the essence of all Sambhit potency. So, and then Prabhupada gave a purport, of course. But back to this Indradumna Maharaj's question. Then Prabhupada says, if you pay attention, even though you don't understand the language, it will act. So then Indradumna Maharaj, he didn't say anything because he didn't want to argue with Prabhupada or anything. Later on he asked that how does it act? It's a Prabhupada said, intelligent holds. Intelligent holds. So of course you distinguish the material intelligence and spiritual intelligence. And then I was thinking also, like Prabhupada says, intelligent is that which kills the desire, material desire, before it turns into action. So when you put all this together, it's very interesting. The spiritual intelligence is, or I would say, coming down through Bhagavatam, through speaker, through great personalities, and it will always stay. May not be visible, may not be memorable immediately, but in due course of time, it will act or it will manifest. It's not lost. We should have very good understanding on that. The more we hear, even though I may not reflect or I may not, you know, trace it back, doesn't matter. Yeah. It is not lost. It will act in due course of time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
In Mayapur, because I stayed there about a year and a half and probably there, and like so many times, not every day, but say over the period, he would mention that the little Bengali boys who were attending Gurukula, in the beginning there were very few, and then by 77, 78, there were more and more. And gradually they would learn English, but many of them were from the village, they didn't know English, and he would point out many times, he'd say, these boys, you may question why they're sitting for the class. They don't understand English. No, he really pushed that point. That one thing people don't, I don't know, I never hear people talk about this, but I believe it was 75, after the Prabhupada gave a lecture, and this is not during the festival time, in Mayapur, in the old temple room, he'd give a lecture, and then he would ask Jayapur Chakramarsh to get up and speak it in Bengali, whatever he remembered. And after he was done, Gaur Govinda, who had recently just joined, I'm not sure he was initiated, and he would have to say the whole thing in Hindi from his memory, like a summary. And interestingly enough, and that sounds funny, but probably like nod off, like, because he'd up all night translating. And I'm sure he was hearing it, but he was just like, he wasn't like, he was just like, he could say, hey, Father, you're not paying attention, but I'm sure he gave the lecture, he knew what it said. But, and there were very few Hindi speakers there. In fact, the Bengalis, you know, a lot of them don't speak, if there were that many of the Bengalis too, but Jatataka would say in Bengali. It was funny, though, but just thought of that.
That's nice.
But then the question, really late, but the question remains, the 2.8.4 in Bhagavatam, Srinata Sabdayanitam Vinantasya Sachistitam Kalena Nati Dirigana Bhagavan Vishadehi. If you hear and if you don't contemplate, okay, I'll go to the positive side first, Prabhupada said. If you hear and you contemplate, then it will produce reflection. And if you reflect, then you can assimilate. Bhagavan will enter in your heart. But then if somebody don't contemplate, just hear, then what happens? It's there, but when, maybe it will take next life? I mean, I'm just curious. It's not lost, but then what happens? That question will, you know, because in Bhagavad Gita 7.17, the Krishna says, 7.16, he says the four types of people, Chaturvidha, Bhajantimam, Sukriti, they have some piety, so they come. But the next verse they say, Tesham Gemi Nitya Jukta Eka Bhakti Vishishtata. Amongst all those people that come to me, one who has complete knowledge and fully engaged, these two principles. So we have to have a complete knowledge and engage. They are the best. And I love them, they love me. That was a very heavy statement, because none of the verse says that he loves us. And you know, it's very. So there has to be some retaining question in our life, not just hearing. I'm just curious, where it draws the line?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's a good question.
Could you work with them? Even if you don't know, the Mahabhuti, I spoke with that in Atlanta, in 75, Mahabhuti was a
traveling party where they would, the library party, they would meet all these big professors, and he felt a little intimidated. Of course, Mahabhuti, you don't find him being too intimidated. He's a pretty confident guy, but he said, but, you know, Prabhupada, we feel kind of insignificant. They're big religion, philosophy professors, etc. And so, but he said, never mind. He said, and he quoted the Tesham, Satata Yukdanam, Bhajanam, Kriti, Bhoga, the Dhamma, he'll give you, even if you're not intellectual. But the lady who used to sleep in the, oh, I used to see her sometimes, people talk about this old lady, she would just get the Jamuna jal and bring it to the deity by the Dhamma temple. And definitely she wasn't a pundit or anything, but Prabhupada said she was pure devotee like that. So you don't have to be a bringing.
Yeah, you can imagine a little simple person who just maybe doesn't have that capacity, but really hears with faith. Like you were mentioning, a little Bengali boys. I think Indians can have this trust. This is a sadhu. I'm just going to listen, even if I don't understand. It's harder maybe for us sometimes in the West. But when there's that real faith, and even though one may not have that intellectual capacity, yeah, they're greatly benefited. And someone has the intellectual capacity, that's also good, because then they can also speak to others and benefit others by their knowledge. So even Rupa Goswami, right, he gives with faith and knowledge. Those are the two for his distinction of Uttama, Madhyama, Kanishta. The Madhyama has complete faith, actually, but their knowledge is not strong. It's still considered Madhyama. But if he also increases the knowledge, then suddenly Uttama, because now that person can serve so much, can give so much. The guru has to have knowledge. If you have a guru who has a deep faith and connection, but not knowledge, it's difficult to influence disciples and to uplift disciples.
But then Prabhupada 9.3 says in the Parpur, Pasadda Dhana Purushadama, in the Parpur he writes, first class will no chance to fall down. Second class will not fall down.
Yeah.
I don't know what's the difference. I mean, there's a little bit.
Yeah.
He said no chance to fall down and then will not fall down. Maybe like little English. And then he says that third class or new pipe will fall down. So there is a difference.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Anywhere
the
Uttama
comes down as a
mountain,
does that mean he's not learning
anymore? No, he's acting as a
mountain.
There's two, right? How many
vicharas
there for mountain and all this? There's two vicharas.
It's
class
over.
Yes.
I
believe so. He acts as a madhyama for the sake of preaching. He makes distinctions.
Because he has a four discriminating power. Yeah. He has a four discriminating power. That's why Krishna used Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur put this in Madhurya Kadambini. I'm sorry. Krishna is, somebody may say, bhakti is unconditional mercy of Krishna? No. It sounds good, but actually it is not. Because if it is so, then the whole world would have bhakti. So he gives a good logic and is very scientific. He said, no, Krishna used Madhya Madhigari to distribute this Krishna consciousness because they have this four discriminating power.
Mm.
And we see Prabhupada, exactly, he came down to that platform and he has that.
Mm-hmm.
So nice.
Sava Jama Devi Nityananda, they cannot preach.
Thank you. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Srila Prabhupada Ki.